If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. I've seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Hey, welcome back. What's going by? I'm the great and powerful Mr.
And I'm Jake Lynn 15. That's the number I am coffee. Today.
And my hog cup.
Hog?
That's the brand, hog.
O-H-O-G-G. I just...
O-H-G-G.
What'd I say?
O-H-O-G-G.
I said that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Check the tape.
It is recorded.
I like hog when it's spelled H-A-W-G.
Hog.
Hog. I found a bowling ball. It's called the Hogzilla. And I just thought this is the best name ever. So I had it.
The only monster, mountain monsters ever caught.
Hogzilla?
They caught one.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And
I think it may have been episode 1 or 2.
Oh, dang.
In Hocking Hills.
They caught him. They actually caught one. Trapper's Trap worked.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't Trapper's Trap.
No. Well, I don't know. I don't watch that show as much. I don't know all the lore. But, no, I found this bowling ball and had it sitting in the back for a while. And then this guy started bowling. Robbie, you know Robbie. He runs the barbecue, food truck. Mm-hmm. So I was like, and he just started bowling. He's like, I didn't want to get my own bowling ball. I was like, actually, I think I have one in the back with your name written all over it. Because he's just barbecue, you know?
He does
pulled pork, yeah. And I'm like, it's called the Hogzilla. It's got your name written on it. And mind you, he just started bowling. So he gets that ball. I drill it for him. First night of league, him using it. starts off his very first game with that ball, six strikes in a row. Mind you, I don't think he's ever bowled six strikes in a night of three games up to this point.
It's the Hogzilla magic.
And that's what I said. It was the highest game. The highest game he's ever bowled in his life. And that's why I said it's that ball. It's a magic Hogzilla ball. I knew it was meant for you. I don't know. Just sometimes the stars align and it's really funny. But yeah, Hogzilla.
Hogzilla. Hog wild with Hogzilla. No, so we're going to have a more relaxed episode. We've been pretty heavy with like jungle walruses and the Akhlut. No. And living UFOs and everything like that. So I wanted to have a relaxing episode. The weekend was tough on both of us.
Yeah.
We're tired.
Very.
So we're using an article from Brent Swanser. And we've used a lot of his articles and stuff like that. He wrote for Mysterious Universe for a long time. He's been into cryptozoology for a long time. So check out his work. But it's all about flying snakes.
Flying snakes. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
So this is more of our atmospheric creature theme?
I don't know. You said that.
Well, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I think there's this book that's out there, and they have a whole chapter on flying snakes.
Actually, there is a flying snake in the kids' book.
Ah.
There's a Quetzalcoatlus for Q.
The plumed serpent.
Yeah, which is...
The rainbow serpent.
No, that's a different thing.
Is it?
Yeah, the rainbow serpent's an aboriginal.
I think the Quetzalcoatlus is also referred to as a... type of rainbow serpent.
There are outside people that put that onto it.
I don't know. That's what it translates to.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
It translates to feathered serpent.
Quetzal is multicolored.
Quetzal's feather.
Oh, that's the mix. So Quetzalcoatlus is the multicolored rainbow universal language. I'm making all this up, people.
Yeah, no,
this
everybody knows.
Satire or no.
Lying.
Oh, yeah. Just lying.
Just lying. Very plain and simple. Regions of Arabia have long said that there's homes of some sort of flying serpents. But before we talk about that, how's the new studio going?
Oh, it's coming along still. Me and Dad got to finish siting it.
You did or got to?
We still got to. But now that it's warm again, hey, that window's open back up. So now we can. Just finished putting the siding up, and then we're diving into the inside, and we're going to hopefully get some drywall and outlet and power run across the whole thing, and then we're ready to at least move this table in there and start
That'd be nice.
Moving the mics in there, and we'll start at least recording in there. We won't have video yet, but we can at least do what we're doing now in there, and then slowly video will be following.
Mm-hmm. That's exciting. Do you want to do a fundraiser for it?
I don't know. I don't like asking people for money. That's the bad thing. I guess if we did, would you guys be interested in helping, I guess? I don't know. I don't like asking. So you just got to do stuff, I guess. But if you guys are interested in helping, I guess we could throw together a little thing that you can donate to. I don't know. But it's just all coming out of... It's all just being happening. We're going to make it happen. So, yeah. If there is, I don't know. Just stay tuned, I suppose.
What if somebody wants to give you $18,000?
Well, that would do it. That would finish it. That would finish the studio, like, right now.
We'd pay, oh my gosh, I just forgot his name. The local handyman.
Arden.
No, the other one. That they look the same.
Shannon?
No. Who looks like Arden?
I don't know, local.
Big Phil.
Oh. Yeah.
Him and Arden look like they could be brothers.
I guess I could see that.
They do. Back to flying snakes.
Flying
serpents, notably in the area around the Arabian Sea. They are typically described as looking like water snakes, only with bat-like wings, upon which they could take flight, sometimes in vast numbers in the thousands.
Like reminds me of flying fish a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that. And also, you remember when we talked about the Russian dragons, the last migration of the dragons?
Oh, yeah. I do remember that.
And they were described as this. Like, long, slender bodies with wings. Like, bat-like wings. And it was 1884, but I may be off.
Gosh.
Or it was said that, like, the locals in the villages said that this used to happen more often.
The migrations?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When there would be thousands of dragons, and this was, like, the last one.
that was witnessed or whatever. Yeah.
At least they were getting rare.
Yeah.
As that was not nearly the numbers that like some of the older people in the villages were talking like, and when they were kids and they would see them traveling, you know. And then that was the last one ever reported of the mass migrations, which we've talked about in the show before, of dragons or whatever dragons are becoming more and more rare. Even I think it was the dictionary from 1890s said
that talked about
dragons now rare.
Yeah, that's wild.
Which,
I mean, there's just so much history of them too. And we talked about it in that one episode, land dragons, air dragons, like the cave dragons.
Yeah, earth dragons.
There's just different.
Dragon is a term. I don't think it's a species.
There you go. Yeah. I was trying to get there, and I didn't know how.
No, it's just a term of large reptilian-like. It doesn't have to be a reptile, but reptilian-like entity, which I think there were plenty of dragons, like we talked about with like the...
What's that Sucus?
Briannosuchus. Which was, dragons are real animals. I 100% believe in dragons, but like Briannosuchus was a real life monster.
Yeah. A long-legged crocodile alligator, one or the other, I don't know.
No, it was his own group, but yes, it was related to both. It was a crocodile in form.
Big land, long-legged
But it hunted, bat. I mean, it was eating giant ground sloths.
Yeah.
Like that time.
What about, and then there's Briannosuchus. I don't know, isn't that from Ark? Big crocodile thing?
So there's Sarcosuchus and Deinosuchus from Ark.
And Briannosuchus ain't one?
We just said Briannosuchus.
We
were just talking about that.
My bad.
I was confused because we were like...
My bad.
We just spent 5 minutes talking about Briannosuchus.
Sarcosuchus, I think, is the one from Ark.
Yeah. And I think that those animals lived much longer. We've talked about this with mass extinctions and die-offs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That there's stragglers and there's hideouts and there's people and there's creatures, especially apexes, right? Apexes are always in low numbers. If you're an apex of a species, great white sharks are the perfect example of being an animal that has a global population that is very low in numbers, with some estimates putting them at like 2,500 individual adults.
Okay.
Like, that's it.
That's not very many.
That's a population of our town over the whole planet.
Yeah, that's pretty spread out.
Yeah. But they're oceanic travelers. An adult great white may visit every ocean in its lifetime, besides maybe the Arctic and the Antarctic.
Right.
They may butt up to them, but they're really not cold water animals, but traveling through in deep oceans and stuff like that. So for a species like these flying snakes / dragons / whatever, if you're migrating continents and you can do it in the sky. So I just talked to somebody about tundra swans. The tundra geese and trumpeter swans.
Okay.
This past weekend, literally, where we're talking like, have you ever seen a trumpeter swan? And the guy's like, no, I haven't. I'm like, well, they're technically native to Ohio, but they fly over us most of the time. Mm. There's like Kilbuck Marsh is one of their stopping spots.
Oh, that's not far from here.
No. And I've seen a flock of them one time out there and they're giant and they're huge. They're huge birds.
Yeah, they are. If you haven't seen one, they're big,
but they fly and they can go up to 500 miles without stopping in their migration.
Mm-hmm.
So they can fly over the whole state of Ohio and the whole state of Kentucky if they live in Michigan without touching the ground.
Yeah.
And they're doing it 4 miles up.
That's wild.
So you have no idea that there's thousands of them up there.
Yeah.
And it can provide this sense of rarity until they stop in their, summering or wintering locations.
Right, yeah.
So it makes me think of like when we did the Dinosaurs Alive episodes and stuff like that, where some of these villages in like Scandinavia in the summer still say, like, yeah, there's dragons on that mountain.
Yeah, yeah.
Or we talked about the... I forgot the Californian one with the dragons out there. They were seasonal.
I'm drawing a blank too.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But where they stop on these mountain ridges and they spend X time there and then they move on again.
Mm-hmm.
And that'd be more like a bobcat in that life cycle. But yeah, so back to Arabian Sea. Sometimes seen in vast numbers. They are said to lurk under about trees. And farmers harvesting these trees were said to be afraid that they would burn Striax, which is resin from the lumber bar tree, under the tree, which is said to drive the serpents away.
Okay.
So when they were starting to harvest it's frankincense trees they were harvesting, they would burn a sap of a different tree to get the snakes out of there.
Okay, that's interesting.
Because they were so scared of them. The only time in the region was supposedly safe from these malicious winged snakes was during spring, when they were said to migrate into Egypt. They're far from mere folklore, the Arabians describe them as real-life animals, giving a good deal of details about the behaviors and life cycles. For instance, the female said to kill the male during mating. and the young would eat their way out of the womb of their mother, killing her. This is, and that their primary predator was the ibis birds. Let's take a pause there. There's a lot of biological information. So let's talk about that. The first thing is the female eats the male during mating.
Okay.
Now,
like praying mantis?
That, there's a perfect example. But there is also many snakes that do this.
Okay.
Cobras. A lot of snake-eating snakes will do this. But it's even been witnessed in non-snake-eating snakes, like anacondas.
Okay. You're talking just the breeding behavior of eating the male?
Yes.
Okay, okay.
And this is a theory that it's during either the female's about to, in, you know, take a very calorically intense activity of producing eggs or live young.
Right.
And, like, anacondas do breeding balls and stuff like that. And sometimes that they are witnessed, like, they're reptile eaters, but they rarely eat other snakes. Anacondas just don't. Like, that's why in captivity, you can see, like, they'll house three or four big female anacondas together. Because it's just not a thing that they do.
They don't.
The only time it's witnessed is during breeding. And the theory is if it's been a very poor year, that's more likely to be a cannibalism year. Where they'll start eating the males. Because, you know, dozens of males sometimes will gather on the females to breed. Yeah,
and you need calories to produce eggs. Yes. So.
So it's that kind of thing. So this could be what's happening is that wherever they're living, you know, Arabia and Egypt and that kind of things are very calorically poor to produce a lot of offspring. So they're taking advantage of eating the male for that.
Okay.
The next one was they would eat their way out of their mother's womb, killing her. Now, while this, I can't think of great examples of this, Sicilians eat their mother's skin as sustenance.
Okay, just like extra calorie boost right off the rip?
Yeah, so the mother's, it's considered not quite milk, but it's considered a form of that.
Okay.
Where the mother will actually put fat reserves in the outer layers of her skin
and then
for her babies to eat.
Does she shed it or
no,
they eat it right off her?
They just eat it right off her.
Huh.
So if you walked up and looked at this, you'd see a nest with a big purple worm with a bunch of little worms with glass teeth eating the skin off her.
Yeah.
So I could see that giving you that impression of that, well, they ripped their way out and they're eating their mom.
I could see that. Okay.
So I can't, I mean, there's a couple things that die during birth. Spiders. It's a lot of invertebrates.
Yeah.
Where their first meal will a lot of times be their parent.
Wow.
But it's very rare invertebrates. I can't really think of a lot of examples of vertebrates.
How much young do they give birth to? Does it say?
Didn't say.
Okay. But it's got to be multiple because
that
wouldn't make much sense to have then, the mom eat the dad and the baby eat the mom and
just produce one.
You know,
I'm imagining dozens.
I think they'd run out.
Well, that's why they're not here anymore.
Oh, okay. We figured that mystery solved.
It is a genetic dead end.
Yeah.
the primary predator is ibis birds, which they do eat snakes.
Mm-hmm.
They're very good at eating snakes, specifically water snakes.
And those are the birds with the long legs and the long beaks, right? That kind of walk through the marshes.
Yeah.
And, okay.
We have white ibises here in the U.S.
Down south, right?
Yeah. They can be in Ohio. They're rare visitors.
Mm-hmm.
But like in the summer around like Lake Erie and stuff like that, sometimes you'll see ibises.
I feel like when I was in Louisiana, there was a lot of them there.
A lot of them in Louisiana, a lot of them in Arkansas, a lot of them in Florida.
Okay.
Like a lot.
Yeah. I mean, driving on the highway, there were
thousands of them there can be.
And I'm not used to seeing them, so it was awesome. It was
they're
like
really cool birds.
Exotic bird, it felt like to me.
So yeah, it would say, sorry, where was I? Occasionally these winged snakes would be seen by outsiders. The 4th century BC, Greek historian Herodotus passed through the region and learned much about these creatures from the locals. They told him the snakes' habitats and behaviors, and even showed him the mountain pass that they were said to pass through during their annual migration, and how the ibis birds would congregate in great numbers as well at this time to feed on the serpents as they made their migration.
Mm.
He would also claim that he would see a large number of skeletons from these snakes at the pass. Herodotus also wrote that these creatures at length in his Historias, saying, and here's a quote, "There are regions, moreover, in Arabia, situated near the over against the city of Buto, to which the place I came to inquire about the winged serpents. And when I came there, I saw bones of serpents and spines in great quantities, so great that it is impossible to make the reports of these numbers. There were heaps of spines and some heaps of large and other less large, others small still. And these heaps were in many in number. The region in which these spines are scattered upon the ground is in the nature of the entrance of a narrow mountain pass to the great plains, the plains adjoined by the plains of Egypt. And the story goes, at the beginning of the spring, the winged serpents of Arabia would fly towards Egypt. The birds, called the ibises, meet them at the entrance of the country and do not suffer from the serpent's bite and go by killing them in great numbers. Only accounts of that deed is this, say the Arabians, that the ibis come in great honor to the Egyptians. And the Egyptians also agree that it is for the reason that they honor these birds. As for the serpent's form is like that of a water snake, but it has wings not feathered, but most nearly resembling that of a wing of a bat. Let so suffice that it has been said now concerning sacred animals.
Wow. Okay, that's a lot.
So basically he's saying that he's seen a bunch of the bones in the past where the ibises were said to eat them. That's why he said specifically why the Egyptians held the ibises in such high regard is because of them preventing huge numbers
of
the snakes invading their homeland.
Okay.
But yeah, and we see this with a lot of animals. So venomous snakes, which, you know, the winged snakes are, and as far as this story goes, venomous snakes. There's like in Arkansas, for example, in modern day, if you go into somebody's barn and you kill their rat snake or their king snake or their pine snake, they're going to be very upset with you. A lot of barns in Arkansas, because there's so many copperheads and so many water moccasins, that they have a big snake eater that calls their barn home.
Okay, so it eats all the bad snakes, yes. Basically, is what you're saying.
All the venomous snakes.
Yeah.
So
those
like,
are the bad ones.
Yeah, and the guy I would stay with does not like snakes at all, but he would threaten anybody that tried to shoot his big snake in the barn.
Yeah.
He's like, that's why I'm not scared to reach under and pick stuff up, because he's like, there's copperheads all over outside, and there ain't none in this barn, because he's right there.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, that's why we say it in the beginning of this, our show. I got to get some snakes and put them in my house.
And I think it's India in the fields where they honor king cobras, where they're very, very strict about you do not kill a king cobra because it keeps all of the more dangerous snakes out.
Right. Don't they eat cobra? Are there cobras?
Yes, that's why they're called king cobras. They're not actually cobras. They're not true cobras.
They're a false. Okay.
They are in the group of like the overall group of cobras.
Yeah.
But they're not true cobras.
Gotcha.
There's a bunch of snakes that hood.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah. So any other thoughts about this?
Not with what you just went on. I think we covered it pretty well.
Again, Arabia is the most distant or south of the inhabited countries. And this is the only country which produces frankincense and myrrh and cassia and cinnamon and gum musha. All these except Mora, are difficult for Arabians to get. They gather frankincense by burning the stalks, which carry the halas. They burn this to get the frankincense, the spice-bearing trees, and gather from the small winged snakes of varied colors, many around each tree. These are the snakes that attack the Egyptians. Nothing except the smoke of this tree will drive these away. So too, if the vipers and the winged serpents of Arabia were born of the natural manner of the serpent life, it would be impossible for men. But as it is, they copulate, while the males in the act of procreation, and as soon as they ejaculate their seed, the female seizes them by the back of the neck and then starts to consume them.
Oh, boy.
So just going on further extreme this.
Yeah.
I mean, the male dies in the way described as female suffers in return, the male following punishment, avenging their father. The young will then start to gnaw their way out of their mother's womb and her bowels to make their way out. Other snakes that do not harm by man lay eggs and hatch out vast numbers of young. The Arabian winged serpent do indeed seem to have numbers, but this is because, although that they are vipers in every land, they are seen, or they are all in Arabia and are found nowhere else. The Arabian gets frankincense in the foregoing ways.
Hmm.
So they like frankincense trees.
Yeah, apparently so.
And he's just describing what he's seen with the reproductive.
And then you said something about like cassia and cinnamon and all that stuff, which cassia is like mostly what we eat for cinnamon nowadays. It's not true cinnamon, but the false imposter cinnamon.
But that's it for that Arabian flying snakes, and they're extinct now.
Mm. Yeah. Did it say roughly when like the last time, you know, they've been reported or anything like that?
So that was
like
four,
what century?
What did I say? 4 BC?
Yeah, 4th century BC. So how's that
4th century BC.
Do you count backwards from zero then?
Yes. Okay. So that'd be 400 BC.
Okay. Or
500 BC.
Or 300 BC. is backwards. At verse 100 would be...
Because it ends in the 4th century. Yeah, so 400. Yes, it would be 300 BC.
Gosh, this is so... I hate that. I hate how that works, timelines and whatnot. None of it's right.
But yeah. So yeah, they're just... They slowly went extinct. There's not much... I mean, they're still talked about now. There's depictions of them and some paleo arts and that kind of... Or not paleo, that's not the right word. And local arts and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
Because that'd be Paleolithic era, and that is not.
No, that's like cave paintings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's still advanced cultures then, but this is just a little bit before Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, we had advanced cultures and whatnot then.
Yeah, so, no, yeah. I'm just saying there was a much more advanced culture.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
In the Paleolithic, at least conventionally thought.
Gotcha, when we were rebooted,
mm-hmm.
restarted.
Another region long said to be inhabited by flying snakes is the desert of Kars's region of Nubia. How do you say that?
Nambia,
which we've talked about this flying snake before, actually in some of our early Living UFO episodes. So the southwest coast of Africa, the so-called Nambian flying snake supposedly was quite the striking appearance, measuring 9 to 25 feet in length, with a wingspan of 30 feet or more, being yellowish-brown with light spots, black in color, with the ability to camouflage itself like a chameleon. It's said to be able to produce bioluminescence from the crest on its head. Oh, yeah, there you go. And is known for its loud, roaring vocalizations.
I don't know why I whispered that.
they were said to live in the caves during the day and come out at dusk.
Van Meter.
And they are very, very territorial. Locals are apparently terrified of the beasts, which are believed to prey on livestock and even people.
Wow.
So yeah, these are giant flying snakes. The artist depictions. So this, when we talked about this originally, and I'll read more. We talked about them being seen as more of the lights out in the desert.
Okay.
And people would warn, like, you don't, like,
don't follow the lights.
You know, don't go out there.
Yeah.
Like, and there was a British, I can't remember his name. What's up, man? There was a British explorer that was like, he's seen this thing flying out in the desert by sheep, and he's like, why aren't you going out protecting the sheep? He's like, I'm not going to die. That thing's a monster.
Yeah.
And he snuck out and peeked over a sand dune and seen that the lights were attached to a massive creature that he said was drinking the blood of these animals, like drinking them dry.
That's insane. So what is that? You know what I mean? Is it one of these flying snakes or is it?
That's how they drew it. Snake is in shape. And we can talk more about that. But his depiction of it was the long body, the big wings, and then the head being in front of the wings. Like a cobra with an extremely exaggerated hood, that would be the wings.
Oh, okay.
In the new monster verse with like Kong and Godzilla, there's a numbat, is what it's called, which is a giant flying snake monster that flies with its wing flaps.
Soft disclosure of ancient creatures.
Yep. But a weird thing is snakes don't vocalize. No snake today has vocal cords. They can hiss, they can grunt, and even some cases you consider a bark, which is just expelling air kind of different ways.
Okay.
They don't have vocal cords, though. So this loud roar is...
That was reported.
It would be, as far as what we have alive today, and a true snake, they don't have the abilities. But if you look at other reptiles, other archosaurs, like crocodiles, right? They produce ultrasonic or like ultra-low sounds.
Bellow, right?
With their stomachs.
Yeah.
But the internal part, it's not vocal cords, though. Crocodiles don't have vocal cords.
Okay.
I don't think there's any reptiles at the top of my head that have true vocal cords. There are animals like toke geckos that have, they may have simple vocal cords.
Well, what about frogs?
Not reptiles.
Oh, yeah, amphibians, duh. We're close, though. Maybe these snakes are, flying snakes aren't reptiles.
Like the Snallygaster.
Exactly. As disclosed on here first, the Snallygaster is a flying amphibian with
giant flying yellow cave
amphibian
salamander.
Yes, with what would we call it in their face? They had the tendrils like the catfish.
So yeah, they're barbels.
Barbels, yeah, amphibious barbels. That's what a Snallygaster is.
Despite terrifying the locals, the creature has been reported by outsiders since the day it first African explorers in the region. One of the most notable accounts supposedly occurred in 1942. The victim of a farm near Kuris West in southwest Namibia. I can't say it.
Namibia, I like that.
How do you say Nambia?
Nambia, there you go.
The account goes that the farmer named Michael was tending to his flock of sheep when he smelled something like burnt tar and looked to see an enormous snake bounding down the hill before shooting straight up into the air, lunging its wings like the sound of the wind blowing through a pipe, and then a great roaring noise. So he's witnessing the sound of it flying, or how it's propelling itself is making the sounds, sound. Not the creature. It's not roaring.
Right.
It's the movement of its body is causing the sound.
Gotcha.
Michael would claim the encounter of the creature on two more occasions after that. It was complete enough that he was investigated by Major Ellen Doris. They have a much longer name. I'm not going to read it. And South African Museum official who in 1938 brought the attention to the world the existence of the coelacanth. In 1978, there was another notable sighting by a French farmer who was tending his cattle and noticed lights approaching him. As it drew closer, he could see the lights was encapsulated on the crest atop the head of a vast winged serpent, which would swoop down and attack his cows and then fly off. He would say this, "What I saw, it looked like, as best as matching description I can give you that, of a dragon. It had a white bright light on its head, which was blinding me. The color of it brown and yellow. It had green piercing eyes. There was a tar-like smell coming from it and smoke coming out of its nostrils."
That's full-on dragon lore.
Think back. Can you think of any flying serpentine animal that had smoke coming out of its face?
Oh. You are making... Okay, hold on.
Come on. It's probably the most famous... it's one of our early living UFOs.
Didn't we? No, it wasn't a Patreon one, was it?
No, it's the neighboring state.
Indiana? Or Pennsylvania?
Indiana. I guess we do have a lot of neighboring states.
Yeah, West Virginia. Yeah, Michigan.
We're five, right?
Kentucky, Pennsylvania.
Canada.
Well, kind of. Yeah, might as well. Across the lake. Lake Erie is a neighboring state. Might as well make it that, you know?
Crawfordsville Monster.
Ah, the Crawfordsville. Okay.
They said it had smoke coming out of its mouth.
Okay.
But yeah, so yeah, very dragon-esque. So serpent, and a lot of these reports, so the Arabian flying serpents are much more like snakes. They're much smaller. They really describe them as classical vipers.
Yeah.
Just with the ability to fly with their bat-like wings. Whether those they have true wings.
Or if it is a...
Or their hoods are extended.
Yeah.
Like they have some kind of mechanical flying app, not mechanical as like a machine, mechanical as in physical.
Yeah.
Ability to flap their hoods to fly.
Did they ever witness them actually flying?
Yeah, like, during the migration.
Duh. I guess with them coming out of the trees, like did they?
Yeah, they would fly down at you and attack you. That's why they had to burn that tar.
They didn't just drop out.
No.
Okay.
As far as they were saying in the stories.
Yeah.
And we could talk about that stories, you know, over time especially can be exaggerated.
Yeah, true.
Like the basilisk, we've talked about that before. The original basilisk was a tiny creature.
Yeah, and now it's like
this big monster.
Yeah, an immovable object.
Yeah. But yeah, so he said it looked like a dragon with a big bright white crest on its head that was burning light.
Mm.
So like you already mentioned, the Van Meter visitor, very Van Meter visitor-esque. In 1988, professor and explorer Ron Markle traveled to the region and investigated such reports. Although he was unable to see one of the creatures or gather any physical evidence, he came away convinced that the creature was real. Europe has its share of such accounts as well. In particular, in the woodlands of Pena Castle, in the country of Glamorgan seems to be a wellspring of flying snake accounts. So before I continue, we're moving off of the Nambian.
Yeah, there you go.
Flying snake. But yeah, where it's just, this is the one we've talked about a lot, where a lot of people see it out in the desert attacking sheep, cattle. Mm. It'll eat you if it gets you. But so most people like.
So when you see the lights out in the desert, you just don't go towards them. Yeah,
but they're huge. These things are said to be huge and they fly out of the mountains and come down. And the one witness that really seen it jump and fly, and that's what the roaring sound was at.
Mm.
So it could be, you could do everything from jet propulsion, as in a mechanical, like as in a physical organism producing jet propulsion. Mm-hmm. Like later in the week, we talk about box jellyfish. Like they, you know, having that kind of thing just to get up.
That's right.
So like a lot of fly. So for example, flying animals, a lot of the limiting factor for how big a flying animal can be is getting off the ground.
Right.
That's why birds will always be, as far as we know right now, be smaller than pterosaurs.
Because?
Pterosaurs could jump. They would run on all four limbs. Their wings were part of their locomotion that they still had hands.
Mm-hmm.
And they could kind of jump up to get lift,
Mm.
where birds do not do that. birds,
they don't jump. Their legs aren't that strong.
They can jump, but their wings are not running with them.
Gotcha.
So when you look at animals, like, for example, like some of our biggest living birds, like albatrosses and condors.
Yeah.
Albatrosses sometimes have to run a long time on the surface of the water to get enough lift to get back up. Mm. That's why they don't want to land. It's because it sucks to get back up in the air. And they nest on cliffs.
Right.
Or these islands that have big wind gusts.
Yep.
Condors nest on cliffs. If a condor lands on the ground, it takes a lot of effort to get back up into the air.
Right.
So pterosaurs are some of our biggest birds, which would be moderate-sized pterosaurs.
We should make, you know, like condor trebuchets, you know, just out in the wild for them to launch themselves back up. Help them, yeah.
And the Andean condors live in the Andean mountains. But these giant flyers you see.
Those are the big, big ones, right?
Californians are bigger, but yeah. Oh, are they? There's only like 200 of them left.
Oh, sad.
But Andeans are up there too with just, I mean, they're almost as big. If okay. not, you could probably argue. There's probably an argument there to say who's bigger because there's not a lot of either of them left.
Are those the ones that in the videos that looks like a person in a big bird suit?
Yes. Those are Andean condors.
They're so weird looking.
They are, because they're massive. They're people size. You just don't realize how big they are.
It looks like people in bird suits, like just sitting there.
But then like you look at animals, like we already mentioned once. Well, we mentioned the Quetzalcoatl, which is the flying serpent. But Quetzalcoatlus, which is the extinct animal.
Correct.
Was the biggest flying thing that we know of with accurate measurements. Mm. 42-foot wingspan, 22 feet tall.
Insane.
And it's because it had this locomotion, this ability to run on all fours and jump.
Jump and get in the air?
Yeah.
They had, where was that in the Columbus Zoo where they have that big old statue of one? Toledo Zoo.
And you can go see it. It's a full-size statue of one. You can see how big they actually were.
You stand right under it.
But they didn't weigh a lot, you know, 500 to 700 pounds.
Right.
Well, which is a lot, but when you're 22 feet tall, you're the size of a giraffe. That's not a lot.
That's not a lot, no. But you can't if you're going to be flying.
Yeah. So as far as the snakes is, lift would be a hard thing. You'd have to imagine them springing, like he kind of witnessed it springing and jumping. Or maybe some kind of propulsion just to get them up.
I bet you they coil up like a spring and then launch themselves.
Yeah, like a hoop snake.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. But yeah, so he went down there to look. But in England. So the Welsh flying snakes have traditionally been described as 6 to 9 feet long, having feathers that are very beautiful, and having the same time very aggressive and dangerous behaviors. They're supposedly ravenous as well, often shot at by farmers trying to keep them away from their chickens and other small livestock. In her book, Folklore and Folklore Stories of the Wells, Marie Travelin, man, today's a rough day, writes of these mysterious creatures. In the woods around the castle of Glamorgan has a reputation of being frequented by winged serpents and the terrors of old and young alike. An aged inhabitant of this castle who died a few years ago said that his boyhood, the winged serpents were described as being very beautiful. They said coiled with the repose and looked like they were covered in jewels of all sorts. Some of them had crests that sparkled with all colors of the rainbow. So this is like Quetzalcoatl, other plume serpents.
Rainbow, just serpents, yeah.
Yeah. This is kind of really dazzling, beautiful nature to them.
Or I wonder if it's too, or if it's just like the, like gardener snakes kind of get it, you know?
Yeah, they can get iridescence. And snakes are gorgeous, especially like when we start talking about vipers. Some of the like eyelash vipers and dragon vipers have some of the craziest patterns in like scales and everything. But what do you know about brightly colored animals?
Well, usually that means it's a big warning sign. It's like warning, warning.
Small brightly colored animals.
Toxic, poisonous, venomous. I don't care. It's usually one of the few. That's what it's just telling you.
When disturbed, they glide swiftly, sparkling all over to their hiding places. When angered, though, they fly over people's heads with outspread wings, bright and sometimes with eyes, too, like the feathers of a peacock's tail. He said it is no old story invented to frighten children, but a real fact. His father and his uncle had killed some of them, for they were as bad as foxes for poultry.
Mm.
The old man attributed the extinction of the winged serpent to the fact that the terrors in the farmland and converts. An old woman, whose parents were elder or were early childhood, took her to this place. She would often hear people talking about the ravages of the winged serpents in the neighborhood. Yeah, so this is one where there seems to be a lot of real life stuff you can look at.
Okay.
Not only were they beautiful, but they were just said, you know, poultry. So England, the UK, has had horrible destruction to its native wildlife.
Yes. Like we killed everything.
I didn't do it.
Not we, as in you and me. We, as in human beings.
Oh, yeah. It's because it was resource. It was a lot of people lived there. Mm-hmm. It was an island.
It's an island, yes.
Or it is an island, sorry. And
yes.
You can only, like, the resources got drained fast.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, a lot of their cat species went extinct. A lot of the deer went extinct. A lot of what, you know, everything got chopped for farmland. Yeah. They have, as far as I'm aware from some of the stuff I've looked into with the UK, there's almost no old growth forests left.
Yeah.
Which is similar to like Ohio, right? Mm-hmm. Ohio was like an agricultural superpower. It still is, but they clear cut everything.
Yeah. And dug up all the coal.
I mean, turkeys and deer went extinct or were extirpated, you know?
Just
and
about.
And now you look now at what turkeys were.
Well, turkeys, yes. Deer came back. We recovered them.
Deer were darn close.
They were on the verge. But the woodland bison gone.
I mean, we don't have moose or elk anymore.
Allegheny wood rat.
There you go, Allegheny wood rat. There's like 8 of those left in Ohio.
but there used to be.
Right. So I can see this, you know, especially if it was a nuisance to farmers.
They're just wiping them out.
Yeah, because it happened to a lot. Like badgers now are really protected. Newts are really protected. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's crazy to me. Crested newts. Are common in the pet trade here in the U.S.
Okay.
Highly endangered in most of the U.K., like where they stop construction if they find them. Like you can't tear apart an old wall if there's crested newts living there.
Wow.
Because they're so rare now.
They need that, whatever environment they got, like, they get to have.
Like frogs. There's a species of frog where a guy has all of them. One guy. The whole species. In his greenhouse. And he's slowly reintroducing them to the U.K.,
all right.
But it was one of these happenstances that somehow he ended up with like the last like 8 of them.
He's got to call that frog kid, start breeding them.
Gosh. Well, yeah, that was a little different.
I know.
So I could see this where they were describing them as very beautiful, like almost parrot-like. And I kind of picture little dragons.
I like the parrot comparison.
They're very parrot-like.
Like a tropical bird.
And I mean, we used to have like Carolina parrots were here in Ohio. Parakeets, Carolina parakeets. And they're all extinct now.
Sad. Passenger pigeons.
But there were tropical looking birds that came all the way up.
Yeah.
So I could see this. And like they said, they were not, like, they were migratory. They only visited the castle for, you know, short periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of fits that where we talked about the Russian flying snakes or the flying dragons. And even when we go back to Arabia, they seem to be highly migratory animals. Stopping in small locations for small periods of time before moving on.
Right.
Which is what you'd expect from a large, not quite a colonial animal, as in they're a colony of them, but if they're moving as one, they're eating a lot of stuff. You look at bison, for example. That's why they, in the wild, they never stop moving.
Yeah.
Most likely for here in the U.S., they were the final nail in the coffin for like mammoths, because they would get to a field first, clear it, and move on. By the time the mammoths would get there,
right,
all the food was already gone.
Gotcha, okay.
So they were not the reason the mammoth went extinct, that they were one of those final nails. Same with like people. People did not hunt mammoths to extinction. We were one of the final nails, though.
They had
several factors going. Like, so same with these guys, where if they lose enough of their migratory spots on this, and depending on how big, like these could be the same group from Arabia.
Oh, gotcha.
These could be the same snakes from Arabia.
Yeah.
And flying up to the UK, maybe they're in the summer or they're in the spring when they leave.
Finding new grounds or whatever. Because
the UK shares a lot. Like, before we knew about bird migrations, there was a crane shot in the UK. And that's how birding used to be done. You'd have to shoot a bird to look at it.
Okay.
And they would look at it, and it had a African spear in its neck.
Yeah, that's wild.
And they traced back where the village in Africa. And that's when we first find, because for a long time, they used to think birds migrated to the moon and hibernated on the moon. Because they didn't know. You look at them and they fly up in the sky and like, well, the moon's up there.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was another thought: the birds migrated to the bottom of hibernated to the bottom of ponds, like turtles, because they'd find turtles and other animals that breathed air would do that. So like, well, aquatic birds have to, you know,
they've got to go the somewhere
because they disappear.
Right. Yeah.
So that was kind of this idea before we really knew about mass migrations, that some of these little animals, like hummingbirds, Costa Rica to Ohio.
What? No way.
We've done the freaky fauna on them.
Well, I've forgotten that fact.
Yes. Some of the same species of hummingbird, the same individuals will go down to Central and South America, will come up here to Ohio.
You wouldn't even think a bird like that's, I guess, relative, but a bird that small just doesn't seem like it would.
Right. So that's what we're talking
about. So far.
6-foot flying snakes could have extremely large migratory routes.
Mm-hmm.
and have these big cyclical like cycles that they go through.
Right.
Or it may even be a 4-year cycle. Some right. animals, like great white sharks, that's what they do, is a 4-year cycle.
Right. Not going in the same place every year, yeah. but.
But if you lose enough of those spots, your whole species is traveling.
Mm-hmm.
That can be it for you very quickly.
Yeah.
And yeah. You're done. A British biologist and a few of his colleagues were conducting some research after being notified of of something strange that he'd witnessed a month earlier. As he stood at the edge of some of the woods by a quarry, they suddenly looked upon an extraordinary entity. Measuring 3 foot long or so, it resembled a serpentine dragon with 4 tiny limbs, but its head was shaped like that of a seahorse, and it was airborne, undulating and wriggling as it flew about 10 feet above the surface of the quarry, widely circling.
Ooh.
They were unable to recall seeing any true wings.
Any what?
True wings.
True wings. Okay.
But its long tail was ended in a pair of horizontal flukes like a whale's tail.
Hmm. Okay, is this a little different?
The entity was green in color with shimmering somewhat that appeared to be solid, not translucent or ethereal. So it was really, really shiny.
Okay.
But it wasn't like truly translucent is what he's getting at.
The wings or the whole body?
The whole body.
Okay.
Because it kind of had that shine like a translucent, like a jellyfish yeah. does, but it wasn't translucent. They watched it for 3 to 4 minutes at a distance of approximately 50 feet before it finally vanished into one of the numerous caves and large crevices pitting around the edge of the quarry. A biologist heard a distant impression while watching that the creature was deliberately seeking to keep them at bay, warning them off of approaching any further of its territory. So this is like fitting that kind of, you know, thing where they're even their size that they would, be territorial towards people.
Yeah, yeah. Just defensive.
Yeah. Any questions?
Mm, no. Not on that one.
In the U.S., they're finding...
Well, I guess one thought.
Okay.
What if it's not a snake? What if it was like a giant dragonfly?
So, snake, I think, we're using the term loosely.
I guess, what if it's not a reptile? That's more what I meant. What if it's like a giant dragonfly?
Yeah, it could be.
Because when you said their wings, they're very translucent, but they move so fast you can't even see them.
A massive dragonfly with the fluke on its tail. So, they have breeding
forks.
Spurs.
Ovipositors.
The females have ovipositors.
Yeah.
The males have these like forks.
Yeah.
Where is a female? Do you remember where a female dragonfly's reproductive orifice is?
Is on her head?
Yep.
Yeah. Most accurate hunters on the planet.
Second.
I thought they were number one.
Oh.
I think they're number one, dragonflies. I think
seahorses are number one.
We'd have to check. We have to check the Freaky Fauna episodes.
Because I think seahorses are 99.5 and dragonflies are 99.
I think they're 99.6. They're one above them.
I think, like, but that's the same thing. Where,
yeah.
If a dragonfly picks you as a meal,
you're done.
You're done.
So imagine a giant one. I don't know. I mean, if these things are far enough away, but I guess dragonflies move in a specific pattern. You know, when they fly around,
and it's kind of could see that. Some
like
of
they
stuff.
Just hover. They hover and they're just there.
I got more of like the skyfish kind of vibes.
Mm.
Where it's undulating, it's very shimmery.
Yeah.
It's that kind of stuff. And then a lot of the skyfish are said to inhabit caves. Like, I think a lot of the rods are artifacting in cameras. And we've talked about that a lot.
Or it could just be bugs.
That's what artifacting is. And what I mean by this is bugs and some birds. Let's say the camera shutter speed is 20 frames per second.
Right, yeah.
But the bird is flapping at 30 beats per second.
So it sees.
It would cause this... You know, smoothing effect because it's still moving during one of the individual frames.
It's like when someone's filming a helicopter, and you can't see the blades moving. It just looks like they're stationary.
I don't really think that most rod videos are real, as in far as an unidentified creature.
Okay,
I think it's just more that cameras can't keep up. Mm. There are now saying I've seen some strange stuff shown to me that would classify as rods that I'd be.
And it's just interesting. Yeah.
But yeah, it's really hard to look at a lot of that and be like.
Mm. My brother saw one of the flying rods or cigar shaped UFO things take off.
That's different.
Yeah, I know. But
skyfish, I mean, I got kind of from this last story in the quarry, kind of a skyfish vibe. And I wonder if they do like bats roost in caves or maybe they reproduce in caves. We talked about a lot of the organic like UFOs, the upper atmospheric animals probably breed here.
Yeah.
And my comparison is always sea turtles. sea turtles often will go out of their environment, you know, even killing themselves to reproduce.
Because
mm-hmm. Some people, I've been asked that even recently. Well, if these things live up there and they have struggle so much down here, why do they come down here? Well, if it's reproduction, a lot of animals do that. A lot of animals will go out of their way to find a better place for their babies.
Well, I mean, or they'll go to like a very dangerous place to breed, like the Sargasso Sea.
Well, yeah, it's dangerous for them,
yeah,
but safer for their babies.
Gotcha. Okay.
Like sea turtles.
What you're saying is, yeah, they'll go way out of their way.
Salmon. They'll destroy their bodies going thousands of miles up a freshwater river because their babies have less competition and less predators in a river environment than they do in the open ocean environment.
Yep.
They'll literally shred their bodies.
Just to do that.
Yeah.
That's wild.
So that's all I'm saying is that these skyfish could be coming down into caval systems too.
It's not
lay
out
big globs of eggs.
It's not unnatural behavior is what you're saying.
So in the U.S., there's plenty of odd reports of flying winged animals. One such sighting happened in the 1800s all over the country. In the 1850s, settlers in the state of Nebraska began telling of giant flying undulating serpents and lightning striking along their side.
Okay.
That were frequently seen soaring over the Missouri River.
Lightning striking along their sides?
Mm-hmm. Like lightning streaks. So bioluminescence is what I'm imagining.
Okay. Like, I imagine.
Not like they're like unlimited power, like Palpatine shooting lightning out of his fingers.
That's what I thought it was like. That's it coming out of the portal.
How I kind of, from the description, and nobody's live to ask, but.
Right, yeah.
Is I kind of view it as the bioluminescent patches on the side that it had lightning in it. Because, I mean, in 1850, you're looking at a monster in the sky and you see light streaking down it.
Yeah.
How else would you describe that?
I was thinking like the cone jellies.
Yeah. Where it's really robotic, crazy lights and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, you're a farmer in Nebraska in 1850.
Yeah.
You don't know what a cone jelly is. And I'm not saying that they're dumb people, but they just don't know.
No, I know. You're describing a Why Is Kids You Know skit.
Well, I was just, people always say that. Well, people aren't dumb back there. I know they weren't dumb, but they don't know what a Komodo dragon is.
We just think they were, you know, just because we have the internet and all that. That's what they did in that skit. They built a time machine. They're like, let's go back and grab a really dumb farmer from back in the day, and we'll bring him to the modern day and watch him freak out. Well, they grabbed him, they brought him in. He didn't freak out. He just looking in awe. He didn't say a word. And then they're like, well, let's take him further in the future. That'll really freak him out. So they went so far in the future, everything's just like, shapes and colors. You know what I mean? It's just. And they freaked themselves out, and the farmer's still they got to go back, and they left the farmer there, but he didn't say a word. He's just observing everything and watching, and never freaked out once. But they freaked themselves out.
Yeah.
So yeah,
like, that's all impressive to him.
Yeah.
But yeah, so a huge serpent, several times in 1873, several residents of F. Scott, Kansas, saw in the sky the form of a huge serpent. Perfectly in form, surrounding the sun for several minutes. In June of the same year, farmers in Boham, Texas, saw a giant flying serpent flying along the clouds. A report in the encounter of Boham Enterprises reads this. It seems to be large and long as a telephone pole, was yellow stripes in color, and seemed to be floating along without any effort. They could see that it was coiled itself up, turning over and thrusting forward its huge head as if to strike at something like a snake would. Despite this maneuver of a genuine snake, the cloud and the serpent moved in easterly directions and were seen by persons a few miles to the side of Honey Grove. Yeah, so I got one more for you. Oh, no, I got two more for you. And so that was just a huge snake. It was seen striking at something that they couldn't see. And snake is, once again, serpent, not snake. They're describing, it's like sea serpents are not described as sea snakes.
Yeah.
It is a serpentine.
Long, slender body. Yes. Yeah.
But it has a huge, massive head, very much like Crawfordsville. And they see it like it's striking at something. And so is this eating skyfish that they just can't see the little animals it was hunting?
Yeah.
And it was actually actively catching stuff
maybe,
like that.
Yeah, maybe it was filter feeding aeroplankton.
It could be. We always talk about these kind of creatures being the sharks.
Right, yeah, I know.
But it could be. I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
In Jeremiah Clark's Unnatural Phenomena, A Guide to Bizarre Wonders of North America, he has a report from September of 1875 of two young men in Liversworth, Kansas, claimed to actually have captured a flying snake. The claim that it was out hunting when the flying serpent measuring around a foot long was spotted with its body began fluttering around them on two wings the size of a man's hand. One of the men was able to swat it out of the air with his hand. The other man stomped it to death and put it in a bottle of alcohol.
Just what we used to do.
Well, I mean, it's happened to like the Arkansas giant killer centipede.
Exactly.
Didn't do anything to anybody.
Stomped to death and put it in a bottle of alcohol.
Unfortunately, nobody's really sure where the amazing physical evidence ended up. It's in that same general store.
Yeah.
It's I think that was in Kansas, too.
The one...
where the kids... Or no, the guy shot the one that ended up in the jar. And then the Civil War took it out.
Kansas or Missouri.
It may have been Missouri. It's Ozarks.
Yeah, I can't remember, but now it's gone because what was that, Civil War?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was hanging up in a general store, and then the Civil War leveled that town.
Yeah, it was up on the shelf. Arkansas Giant Killer Centipede, good episode. Go back and listen to it.
But yeah, so they just describe it as a flying serpentine animal with like fairy wings. It's like or butterfly or dragonfly wings, like that.
Yeah, bat wings.
Yeah. This is more like ethereal clear wings.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The dragonfly ones. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, which, yeah, I mean, they're just different styles of wings. In March of 1882, two lumberjacks in Hurlton, California, saw above the tops of the tree a massive flying serpent with the head of that of a crocodile. This is more dragon-esque.
Yeah.
One of the men fired a shotgun, which incited a cry similar to that of a calf and a bear combined, but gave no sign of being inconceivable or injured.
Okay.
So they shot it with a shotgun, and it went, bleh! And like, oh. And then it just kept flying.
A calf and a what?
Bear.
Bear, gosh.
Like, I imagine like a calf bleat and like a bear roar.
Yeah.
That's my best
impression. That's pretty cool. That's like
a giant flying serpent with a crocodile-like head.
So a massive, it sounds like a massive dying goat.
Yeah, there you go. In 1888, three young men in Durland County, South Carolina, claimed to see a giant 15-foot-long serpent gliding above them, about the speed of a hawk, making a hissing sound. And in 1897, a witness in Detroit from all over places claimed to have seen something remarkable, saying this: "Going down Grand River about 4 in the morning, a policeman and I saw an object that looked to be about 3 feet in diameter. It was about 1,000 feet in the air and heading east. A silvery color and the tail about 3 blocks long." So very long.
Yeah, that's pretty long.
"It traveled like those big sea serpents you read about skimming the top of the water. It made a low hissing noise that you could just barely hear. My dad, who was leaving for home from work, and also a few others saw it seem to pass above our houses on Riverdale between Leland and Alexandria."
I don't know where that is.
We pass it going up to the cabin.
Really?
That's the Saline River right there.
Oh, Leland.
Yeah. You see signs for Leland.
This Leland. Yeah. Okay.
So that's a bunch of sky snakes. So
that one almost hits home.
No, I mean, it's right down. I mean, oh.
Right up the road.
Yeah. So we have everything from, I think these are real animals. I don't think they're paranormal as in interdimensional.
Okay.
I think these are flesh and blood. Dragons were.
Okay.
Especially flying dragons.
These may be the remnants.
These are them.
Yeah.
And
what's left anyways.
Yeah. Some of the big ones especially.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are still some of them. I think they could be some of our atmospheric creatures.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a crossover with the atmospheric fish kind of, you know, vibe with some of the small ones. Very venomous, very dangerous. I do think they could have been a terrestrial species too. We go back in time. I don't think they're true snakes. Very few of them actually have. They have reptilian-like appearances.
Yeah.
With scales or armor and brilliant colors.
Mm.
But very few actual reptile qualities.
Okay.
Specifically flying. There's very few reptiles that have truly flown. You have dragon lizards, draco lizards, which glide off their ribs. And you have flying snakes, which flatten their rib cages and fly and glide. We don't have any flying reptiles alive today. Pterosaurs were the only flying reptiles, powered flight reptiles in like great numbers.
That fly like birds fly. Yeah. That's what you're saying.
Powered flight is like, what it's considered.
Yeah.
We have gliding reptiles.
Mm-hmm. But that's not flying. That's falling with style.
So I could see, especially some of these. Oh, we talked about the dragon migrations in Russia that slowly dissipated. And that matches really closely to the Arabian stories They matched really closely to the UK stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think there could have been populations, a bunch of these small species, like little dragons.
Yeah.
And if you look, a lot of culture, like the modern four-legged winged dinosaurian dragon is very new culturally. UK dragons often had two legs and wings and long serpentine bodies. And you look at Asian dragons, like a lot of them have longer, slender bodies.
So you're saying like the
big bulky thing is a more
like
modern,
the Sir George dragons, yeah, like fighting.
That's a more modern our interpretation of dragon lore.
Even like the Game of Thrones type you're talking?
That's closer.
Yeah.
But even a lot of the depictions of them weren't nearly that bulky.
Right, yeah. That's
much
what I'm
more like long and serpent.
Like the Game of Thrones ones are more the bulky ones, as opposed to like these guys in the stories. It's the serpentine, long, slender guys.
So I can see a couple options, I guess. So first one is that these are atmospheric creatures. And I don't even really think that for some of the little ones. But some of the big ones, especially because a lot of them do have similarities to Crawfordsville monsters. They could be related as in the same clade as the little ones. And they just spend more time up there because there's more prey.
Different niches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, these little guys could be skyfish. What, you know, because we don't know what skyfish are. Most of the eyewitness reports of skyfish, because I didn't really include them in the book, are just the piles of shimmering little animals with no discernible characteristics, like a school of fish.
Yeah, right.
Like a defensive mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
They almost look like tornadoes or big clouds of this tiny, like, plate-sized animals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a defense mechanism. You're not supposed to be able to pick out characteristics. That's the whole point.
Individuals, yeah. Yeah.
That's the whole point of that defensive strategy.
Looks like one big, massive thing.
Yeah, even if it looks like a dozen or two dozen or a thousand little things, you can't see where one starts, one ends, and they're constantly shifting. And it's that whole point of that presentation is to confuse predators.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you don't get a lot of eyewitnesses with descriptions of those events besides that, because that's the point. You're not supposed to be able to see eyes and fangs and feet and count toes.
Right.
And so it's maybe some of these little guys are skyfish. I really think that these are dragons, whatever dragons are, or at least some of the dragons. I think that they were highly migratory, earthbound animals. I think they would have big, probably cyclical migration patterns where it may have been 5 or 10 years. And I think Snally and some of these other creatures could have fallen into that pattern.
Yeah.
And we used them. They were, a lot of them were killed. Maybe even they were babies, not even full grown, where they were killed for bothering chickens. And you had the giant ones in the U.S. and you had giant ones in Namibia.
Yeah.
But they got rarer and rarer because people started killing them or killing their offspring or destroying habitat. And I think that's probably the biggest one, is that we took out the bottom of their food chain, their migrational patterns. So when you do this, you, like, even if you're not going out and people aren't slaying 80-foot long flying serpents,
yeah,
if they don't have a place to reproduce, or where their babies migrate or where they migrate to is gone, then they're just going to starve to death.
Yep.
They're just, and that's when you start seeing more of them run into cattle. So animals aren't dumb. No animal's dumb, especially predators are not dumb.
They all need to have the will to live.
When you see a lot of modern day predators, and I'm talking the last 300 years, modern day predators. When you see a lot of them running into cattle and sheep and livestock and really, really preying upon that, it's, and I'm talking apexes. I'm not talking coyotes and raccoons. I'm talking apexes.
Right.
You really start seeing that they have a problem fundamentally in their environment, because they will avoid human settlements. They want to avoid livestock. They know it's domestic.
If they're seeking that out, it's usually there's something wrong. There's a problem.
So when you look at from the 14th century on, or even earlier, like the 400s on, the 4th century on, talking about knights fighting dragons and them killing cattle and attacking people and stuff like that.
Yeah.
To me, if it's a real species, which I think it is, it looks like the species is losing equilibrium. And by that, I mean it's losing stability.
Okay.
So it's a species that it's losing its migratory spots. It's losing maybe nursery spots, like we talked about where that castle was.
Mm-hmm.
Could be the same species as the giant feathered serpents, that, you know, the giant plume serpents.
They've just been knocked down because of factors.
That's the babies.
Oh, okay, okay.
So that's a nursery spot.
Gotcha.
So if they don't have nursery spots, like sea turtles, right? There's only so many beaches leatherbacks breed on.
Yeah, right.
So there's whole groups of that species of leatherback sea turtle that are extinct now, because that one two-mile stretch of beach is gone. Real estate.
Yeah.
So, and then you start getting the adults get desperate, and they're running out of prey, and then they start fighting cattle, and you know, in Arabian.
People, do whatever they can to survive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to me, I really think that they are a big premise of the dragon mythology is these flying snakes, which I don't think they're true snakes. If they are reptiles, I think they're much ancient order of reptiles. And they just survived maybe, you know, the mass extinction at the end of the Cretaceous. And, or that they're a wholly unrelated thing that just happens to be armored and gives the appearance of scales.
Well, what if two, didn't they say, or, you know, our conventional timeline birds, you know, where they came from, was, you know, dinosaur-ish?
They are dinosaurs. Technically, this, we've talked about this, arguing in the and how things are classified.
Yeah.
There's non-avian dinosaurs and there's avian dinosaurs, a.k.a. birds.
Yeah, yeah.
To me personally, they are different because they do have different characteristics.
Right.
But there are plenty of, yeah. So what was your,
What I'm saying is like, so, you know, some, I guess, dinosaurs turned into birds. Some turned into...
this thing?
Well, yeah, or I was going to say reptiles, just straight up reptiles we got now. And then this thing's kind of somewhere in between still.
So technically that would have been reptiles were before.
Okay.
Dinosaur. I'm sorry, in traditional understandings, yes, gotcha. Reptiles are much older than dinosaurs.
Okay.
Dinosaurs came from reptiles into birds.
Oh, so I have it backwards a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Because there was the time of reptiles and stuff like that before dinosaurs, but...
still, whatever dinosaurs were, they're... could be dragons, you know, they're half bird, half reptile.
Let's say that these are armor plated, like we talked about the flying snakes, the cyanophores, these giant, like Crawfordsville.
Yeah.
And they have big armor, because Crawfordsville had armor plated head. You know, it had parts of its body that was armor plated, but it had bioluminescent patches. And a lot of these big ones have what could be interpreted as bioluminescence from, the desert snakes having the big crest that glows like Van Meter.
Yeah.
To the ones in the U.S. seen with lights down the sides of them, like lightning trapped inside.
And we didn't even talk about, like, we did, you mentioned in the book the hoop, or not the hoop snakes, but the flying, like, fireball snakes above, what was that, the airport in India.
India still has them.
Yeah.
And so I don't think they're fully extinct. I think they're much rarer.
Yeah.
And I think the little ones are extinct. If the little guys, these ones that used to migrate in thousands and thousands.
Yeah.
I think they're extinct. I think
that, or functionally extinct, maybe.
Yeah, and there could be a couple of them here in a rainforest, there and here in a desert. Like, I mean, you look at the places that are unexplored, unexplored.
A lot of the Earth is.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying that where these animals could be.
Yeah, exactly.
Like rainforest in Africa, right? Yeah. Most of the other parts of Africa are pretty heavily inhabited, like savanna lands and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It'd be very hard for them to hide there without being discovered.
Yeah,
but in the jungle or in the middle of the Sahara.
Where nobody, or shoot, middle of the outback in Australia.
That's a whole, like, nobody lives there.
Yeah.
Not even the aborigines live there.
Right, yeah.
Because it's horrible.
Yeah. Because it's full of flying snakes.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, the ground snakes are pretty.
Pretty bad.
Yeah, the inland taipan.
Yeah, let's hope there's no flying snakes in Australia. That means things in Australia can get out, and we don't want that. You put things in Australia for a reason, so they stay there.
What do you think about these guys? Where would you put your money on?
I'm kind of with you. I think that they were real at some point. I don't think this is all just made up folklore. And
they're too common.
Yeah, across the board.
Across the board.
Yeah.
Like we mentioned, I think every continent, right? Well, we didn't really talk about Asia. That's Wednesday's. Well, on Wednesday's episode, I have another flying serpent from Asia specifically.
Okay.
But Australia, South America, North America, Europe, Africa.
You mentioned Russia. That's Asia.
Yeah, we talked about Russia. And,
so yeah. There you go.
Russia's a weird one because it is.
I know, Europe, it's like Europe and Asia.
Cold Asia.
Eastern Asia. What's it? I don't know. There's like, I watch sumo wrestling and there's a Russian guy in the top, but he's Eastern Russian. So he just looks like Mongolian or something, but he's Russian. So it's confusing. Yeah.
So I really don't know, but I do think they were dragons. Whatever dragons were, I think these guys hold the basis for the dragon mythology of modern day. Mm. I think people did kill him, whether it was like killing all their babies.
Yeah.
For getting in chicken coops. Like they talked about that in the UK. Like, yeah, they were just annoying.
Oh, yeah.
They got really annoying, so we killed them all.
Wonder if he, yeah, I mean.
We talked about it with fire salamanders.
Gosh,
An animal that they thought, which is sent to start fires.
Yeah.
They almost wiped them off the face of the planet, let alone an animal that they actually seen eating a chicken.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Or,
yeah.
Like, look at the Trilocene.
Okay.
Where they accused it of killing sheep.
Yeah, in Australia.
And they wiped them out in a decade.
Yep.
And then later they're like, oh, sheep are still dying.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the dog? It's dingoes?
Oops.
So, yeah, an animal being persecuted, especially one, migratory animals are very, very subject to change. Like, they just go out the window. They mm-hmm. just, yeah, I don't know. I really think these are dragons. I think they probably fit into the atmospheric biome some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Maybe some of them are terrestrial, and those are the ones that are mostly extinct. And then the big upper atmospheric predators, I think, probably fall into this clade, where you get, like, Crawfordsville.
Yeah.
You get these ones coming over rivers. You probably get the Nambian, the desert snakes, the Indian airport ones.
Hmm. I wonder if they do, or even the big ones are the small ones. And
that could be.
The small ones, you know, they get so many, you know, I don't know, like 100, example, 100 in a litter, you know, only two make it to
Well, like sea turtles. A lot of reptiles and invertebrates. And
two make it to the top of the mountain mm-hmm. and get to reproduce, be the next king.
Yeah. I just think their numbers were just hit hard.
Yeah.
Whether, and it may not have been on purpose, like we already mentioned a dozen times now, but like farmland, if where they were going to breed is now farmland.
Gone, yeah.
And they give birth to babies still there because they're programmed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Their babies have nothing to eat besides a couple chickens, and then the people are going to kill them because they ate the chickens.
Yeah, exactly. And 99.9% of all life's been extinct.
Or is unknown.
Unknown,
and
yeah.
extinct.
And yeah. extinct, so yeah. So for the, I mean, stuff to just go out the
fossils
window.
Fossils are very rare.
What is?
Fossils.
Fossils, okay.
Are very rare.
I thought you said possums at first.
Possums are very rare.
I was like, what?
This is actually a flying possum. There you go.
There we go. Mystery solved.
That would be nothing. I'd own a flying possum.
That would be cool.
Actually, there are flying possums.
Are there?
Yeah, there's a little marsupial that glides. It's like related to possums.
Okay, there we go. We're close.
I guess golden possums could kind of fly if you threw them hard enough.
Anything can if you throw it hard enough.
Yeah. But yeah, you got any final words for flying snakes?
If you haven't checked out the book yet, it's in the links in the description below. If you have any interest, if you've been listening to our show and you still haven't gotten the book, or
it's very simple,
have interest in atmospheric creatures, I highly recommend it. Just to get a basic understanding of the atmospheric creature biome. And so when we discuss topics like this, you can see kind of where they fit in with all the other things. Because there's just a lot of weird stuff that goes on in our atmosphere, that whole unexplored biome that we just don't talk about.
It's the biggest unexplored piece of real estate on the planet.
Absolutely. And
besides maybe the core, the mantle.
And we don't even know what that is.
I know.
We don't even know.
I know what it is.
Yeah, an egg. Could be an egg. Could be. I think it's the source of where all, I don't know. I was going to try to do some philosophical, looking inward, deep meaning thing, but I got nothing. I'm just tired today.
All right. I have been the great and powerful mystery.
And I've been J-Clone 15.
We'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J-Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.